Blog Talk Radio.
Hermetic Hour for July 29th, 2010. And I'm your host, Polk Runyon. Tonight we'll discuss the background behind the 2007 cult film Beyond Lemuria, which I wrote and produced for CHS Productions. Now, Beyond Lemuria is a feature-length science fiction occult drama that was filmed in the ancient ruins of Nan Madol out in the Pacific, inside an OTA temple in Pasadena, high up on the slopes of Mount Shasta, and deep in the lava caverns under America's Holy Mountain. That's Mount Shasta. Now, the film features leading occult figures in the roles of the Mount Shasta avatars. Lon Milo Duquette takes the role of Hermes Trismegistus. Paul Clark, of the Hidden Light, is the Master Jesus. Mary Kamer is Phylos of Atlantis. And our own Frater Solomon is Semyaza, the fallen angel from the Book of Enoch. Now, the dark side of the drama involves the Shaber Mystery, a 1940s revelation of a secret underground realm of Atlantean Lemurian survivors who possess the super-secret scientific weapons of the ancients. Now, these evil Darrows offer their secrets to the black magicians in the film, while the white magicians, played by the same actors, seek the wisdom of the ancients up on the slopes of the Holy Mountain. Beyond Lemuria is available on DVD from Amazon, that's a plug, and is occasionally shown to select audiences. Most recently at Hop Louie's Bar and Restaurant in L.A.'s Chinatown for a group of college art students. That was arranged by Charles Irvin. I hope you're listening, Charles. Now, tune in and get the behind-the-scenes rundown on our controversial cult classic. Okay. Now, Beyond Lemuria is a labor of love and a lot of fun, and it was something that we've wanted to do for quite some time. At least we wanted to make a feature-length film, a drama. And we've made, three very, very successful occult documentaries, which some of you, I'm sure, have seen. The Magic of Solomon, and the Dark Mirror of Magic, and the Rites of Magic. And we were all the time we were doing these, we were thinking, well, one of these days we're going to make a real, 2-hour-long adventure, kind of a occult adventure sort of film. We sort of wanted to do that, and so we finally, around about 2005, early in 2005. We settled on an idea for what we wanted to do. We had several areas we could do this in, but we decided that we would make use of a couple of resources that we had here in California that would be unique and would give our film a lasting value, an enduring value, because we would show Mount Shasta, which is absolutely beautiful, breathtakingly beautiful area, and it has a long-standing reputation as a very mysterious place, a mystic mountain where people have received visions and revelations, especially of Atlantis and Lemuria. And we would use Mount Shasta, but a lot of people don't realize that on the slopes of Mount Shasta, right to the north, is a whole complex of caverns, and frankly, rather sinister complex of caverns. This is in a badlands. Mount Shasta is a beautiful alpine area, and then this to the north, this lava flow is a somber area of badlands, like something out of Lovecraft, or like the devastated Easter Island. It's the right place for a sinister cavern complex, and there certainly is one. And most people don't realize that. And the people up at Shasta, or the people that have discovered the mystic aspect of Shasta, they don't dwell on it either. But we were very fortunate in our group to have Ed Fitch, who is, by the way, one of the stars of the film. He plays Colonel Rich and the dual role of Bobby John Rich, the Reverend, the preacher, and Colonel Rich, the detached service CIA type agent. So he plays this dual role. And Ed grew up in that area. He grew up at in the Mount Shasta area, up in Yreka. And he was very familiar with the caves up there and the lava fields. Now, Ed and I both had, when we were younger, we both, and I'm in this case, I'm talking about when we were teenagers, we both read the stories in Amazing Stories Science Fiction magazine. We read the allegedly true accounts of this ancient civilization that lived in the caverns under the entire world. It was supposed to be honeycombed with caverns, in a series of stories called The Shaver Mystery that ran in Amazing Stories back in the 1940s, the middle 1940s on into the 1950s. And these stories were really, really kind of frightening and very exciting and also very sexy too. So as teenage boys, naturally, we enjoyed the sexual aspect. These underground dwellers who were supposedly, according to Shaver, they were leftover survivors of ancient Atlantis and Lemuria. And they were demented, and they were satanic, and yet they were in possession of super scientific ray machines that they could use to mentally manipulate and control people on the surface. Oh, this was really scary stuff. And so Ed, knowing about these lava tubes and this cavern complex up there in Shasta, he said, we ought to do something using those caves. And I said, well, that's a great idea. And we both, of course, knew about the Shaver thing. In fact, I think, looking back on it, I think that Richard Shaver was probably responsible originally for getting me into the occult. Because when I was 16 years old, I was reading this Shaver stuff, and I was actually kind of believing it. In fact, we mentioned in the commentary on the film that right around the corner from my house in St. Petersburg, Florida, there was a little bungalow right around the corner that a woman by the name of Mary Reeser lived in. And while I was reading these Shaver stories, she burned up from the inside out. There was nothing left of her but just part of her lower leg and a shoe. And this was one of the most well-documented and one of the strangest cases of human spontaneous combustion on record. And this happened right around the corner from my house. In fact, I have to admit it. I hope you guys aren't eating dinner. I could smell it. And I was terrified because I thought that you know, I thought that the Darrows were aiming at me and hit her by mistake. Because one of the things about these Darrows is that they're, even though they're mad and they're insane and they're demented, they still have a ability to creep into your mind. And if you know about them, they know about you. And this was something I got talked out of it by my friends who were all reading science fiction when we were in high school. And they talked me out of it and brought me back to some. You know, former real, but I always remembered my Shaver period, and I think it was what started me off maybe in this interest in the occult. Well, Ed had loved the Shaver stories too; he really liked them, and so we decided that we would do a film on that, and we would explore these caves up there and see how that would work. Well, so in 2005, I went on up there with Ed and with his with both of his boys and their girlfriend and whatever, and we went out and explored Pluto's Cave. Oh boy, and Pluto's Cave was absolutely perfect for making a film. It couldn't be better because it had huge caverns and galleries and all this, but every so often the roof would fall in and you would have what they refer to as skylights. So this meant that we did not have to haul a whole bunch of very expensive lighting equipment into this cave. We had to actually we could use natural lighting, and I looked at this and I thought, my gosh. You know, and I had my little camera, my little camcorder along, and I started taking pictures, and I thought, gee, we can do this, because otherwise, trying to take a crew on location from Los Angeles and go on up there 600 miles and get back down in a cavern and do a film, the lighting would have been that would have been a major obstacle. This was perfect, and yet the cave has, you know, it goes for couple of miles way back up into the darkness. It's a very sinister place, but it's also has a haunting beauty about it. So we decided this would be our Darrow cave, definitely. But you know, when I was up at Shasta, I told Ed, I said, but you know, that mountain is so beautiful and it has such a reputation for engendering visions and all. I'm going to go up the mountain, and I'm going to see what you know what I can have. If there's a vision to be had up there, I'm going to go try to have one. So Ed was he was off somewhere else at the time. I went up, drove up the Everett Memorial Parkway all the way up to Ski Bowl, up at the top of almost to the top of the mountain. About the mountain's 14,000 feet high, and that gets you up to about 10,000 feet. I was up there, and I hiked up to this little grove where I could sit down and I could on a rock and look up at the glaciers and look up at the peak of the mountain. And I sat up there and I meditated, did my hermetic yoga, and I had the second time I tried it, I had a marvelous, marvelous vision. It's one of the best magical, mystical visions I've ever had. And I contacted the spirit of the mountain, and the spirit of the mountain told me that the reason why people remembered Atlantis and Lemuria up there is because they were going up the top of the earth, and they were identifying with the earth, and that was, and they were in a higher state. It was like Kether and Malkuth, and they could access their memories because the temple of the mountain was within you. And this was just a beautiful, beautiful vision. So I came down the mountain, and I went back to this little motel that I was staying in, and I was lying on the bed with my boots still on, lying on the bed, sipping a tall, cool one, and Ed finally came in the door, and I looked up at Ed, and I said to him, I said, "You're late, Indiana.
I've already been up the sacred mountain. I've found the Holy Grail. You know, because we, Ed and I play this Henry Jones and Indiana Jones bit back and forth frequently. And I told Ed, I said, Ed, we do this film. I am not going to insult this mountain. Sure, we're going to do the Shaver mystery down in the cave. That's great. But I want to contrast. I said, I realize what we have to do is we have to contrast the beauty and the enlightenment and the mystical attainment of the mountain in the sun and the day and the beautiful mountain with the darkness and the depth of the cave. We have to contrast the two. So the idea here was that I had at that point was to write a script where we would have this in stark contrast. In other words, a morality play. Now, I have to say this. I hadn't seen I hadn't seen Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain. I didn't know what that was all about. So there are some similarities to Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain and Beyond Lemuria. But at the time, I came up with this. The idea was to have two groups, and I went back and I started researching it, and I read very carefully the book that started off the whole Mount Shasta Atlantis thing. That book was called A Dweller on Two Planets, and it came out about 1887, actually published around 1900. And it was channeled by a 17-year-old boy, but it basically involved an Atlantean adept who called himself Philos. Now, Philos of Atlantis was the Mount Shasta avatar who started off the whole business. The IM movement is a spinoff from Philos. The Telos things that's going on now up there, that's a spinoff from Philos. Everything goes back to Philos. So I very carefully studied Dweller on Two Planets so that we could use Philos as the basis for our good guys, our adepts that would go up the mountain. And then, of course, we had the Shaver stories, which I was very familiar with, you know, to be the contrast. Now, let me mention right now that we have some people that were in the film that are listening in. And remember now, the guest call-in number is 347-857-1830. So go ahead, and you don't have to be a member of the cast to call in. I mean, you go ahead and call in on that number. I'll give it to you again. 347-857-1830. So the idea here was to combine these two themes and then play them back and forth. So I began to work this thing out, and before we, you know, actually went into the field to do it, and I came up with the idea of encapsulating the whole movie into the context of a hermetic initiation ceremony. Now, the candidate for this initiation, that's Chris Sanders playing the candidate William Morgan. It's a little bit of a secret meaning to William Morgan. Those you Masons are probably familiar with that. William Morgan was the fellow back in the 1830s who was going to expose Masonry and disappeared, never to be seen again. And he was also used as a character in another subterranean story called Etta Dorfa. So we called our candidate William Morgan to see if we could ring some bells with that one. Anyway, Chris played William Morgan, and he was essentially an OTA candidate. And standing before the altar in the beginning of the film, he stands before the altar, and there are two cups on the altar, the black goblet and the white goblet. And the priest, and I played the priest in the temple, holds his hands out and indicates that he has to choose. He has to choose whether he's going to follow the path of darkness or the path of light. And Lon Duquette appears as Hermes Trismegistus off to the side, and he says that the choice is between light and darkness. The choice must always be yours. And he turns the hourglass upside down, and then he disappears. And this whole film, that whole two-hour adventure, occurs in the time it takes that sand to run out. Now, those of you who have just seen this film, Inception, there are some similarities here. In Inception, they have a machine about the size of our intergravitron, which enables you to invade people's dreams. And we have a machine about the same size that allows you to go into the Darrow's dimension. And in Inception, the whole film occurs, and this is a lifetime of adventure, occurs while the little top is spinning. So we used, back before Inception was even incepticated, we used this business of the hourglass. All the action in Beyond Lemuria occurs while that hourglass, while the sand is running out, and while Chris is there in front of the altar, just wondering whether he's going to be follow the path of light or follow the path of darkness. Now, so we shot that part of it was shot inside the OTA temple in Pasadena. Now, what we then did, and in order to set the stage, make sure everybody, the audience understood what the context was, because, most people don't remember Dweller on Two Planets.
The Shasta book.
And most people these days don't remember the Shaver Mystery. So we had to explain both of these. And we used a device to do that, being good at doing documentaries. We went right from the temple to a university symposium, which was actually shot in the dining hall at Culver City Masonic Lodge. And I took the part of the anthropologist, Dr. Marion Rowland, giving a lecture on the Shaver Mystery. And so we had a chance to do a documentary on the Shaver Mystery, a short one. And then we said that after a break, we would do a lecture on, I would do a lecture on the Mount Shasta and the background of Mount Shasta. Now, this gave us a chance, of course, to do these documentary films, which we put together. Now, this is where the non-Madole out in the Pacific aspect comes in. Shaver had been very, very much influenced by the writings of Abraham Merritt, who was a very well thought of and prominent fantasy science fiction writer back before World War II. Now, Abraham Merritt had written, his first novel was called The Moon Pool, and it was set in the ruins of Non-Madole, way out in the Caroline Islands in the Pacific. This is a huge ruined stone city complex out in the middle of the Pacific on this small island out there. And Merritt had written a story about caverns underneath Non-Madole. And the ancient Lemurians that and some of them pretty bad, that lived in these caverns under Non-Madole. Now, this first came out in 1920. Shaver was very much influenced by this. He thought Merritt was writing true stuff. And Merritt, of course, had written fiction, but the fiction was based upon various legends. By the way, there are caverns under Easter Island. And the Easter Islanders went underground and began to eat each other. So there's ethnographic analogies for this. But anyway, I had discovered this around the time I discovered the Shaver Mystery. I had, back when I was 16, I discovered this non-Madole thing. And I read Merritt's novel, just like Shaver had. And so I always wanted to go out there.
Well, about 1988, I talked a girlfriend of mine into going out there with me. And we went out there and to Madol. We crawled all around the ruins and did a little diving off the breakwater and got some. And she took some terrific footage. That was Catlin Miller. She took some terrific video footage of the ruins and me, you know, prowling around the ruins and her prowling around the ruins or whatever. And so we had this footage, and this did relate to the story. Now, on top of that, Mark Nelson, who plays Dr. X and Dr. Xavier, the dual role of the mad doctor and the good doctor, good scientist, in the movie, Mark had been stationed out in Kwajalein as an engineer in 1998, and he went over there with his girlfriend, now his wife, and they went over to Nan Madol, and they got there on a better time than I did for diving. There's only one time during the year you can really dive out there, only about one month. And so they got really good underwater footage of the ancient ruins of what some people think was Lemuria. So we had this non-Madol footage, both Catlin's and mine, and we had Mark and Marlene's footage of non-Madol. So, and we worked that into the documentary that we showed on the Shaver mystery. And you'll see some footage on Nan Madol that nobody's ever seen. Not the History Channel we got some really good footage on Nan Madol. So that's why we say that we shot this film in Nan Madol, up there on Mount Shasta, and then down in Pluto's cave. Now, we had two documentaries, but we split them in the middle. So what we did was, after we finished the Shaver part of the documentary, we started the drama. We had the Draconians, the evil group, all wearing black, and they left the symposium, and they got into their nefarious doings, which involved one woman getting burned up just like Mary Reeser. She got burned up from the inside out. That was kind of a shocking scene. And then they plotted to go up to Mount Shasta, and they were going to contact the Darrows, and they were going to get these secrets. And so the Darrows are making all these plans to do this. The Draconian Lodge is making all these plans. Now, Merrick Hamer, who is actually, I think, the star of the show, Merrick Hamer plays a dual role of Brother Abaddon, the Grand Master of the Draconians, a very insidious, evil character. And his opposite, he plays the Master Phylos. And a completely opposite character. And, of course, Abaddon is all in black and carries a broom-handled Mauser. And whereas Phylos is dressed all in white and has the solar staff. So this is the totally contrasting roles. What's the Draconians make their plans? And kill the poor scientist in the wheelchair, and then they get off, and they're driving up to Mount Shasta, and I bought my black Hummer. That's a Hummer 3, by the way. I didn't buy one of those big slab-sided 2s. I got a nice little black Hummer 3 for the Draconians, and I liked it so much that I kept it. I mean, that's what I drive right now. They took off in the Black Mariah to drive up to Shasta, to get into the cave and get the treasure. Now, we worked in this story, we worked in a legend of J.C. Brown and his treasure under Mount Shasta in Pluto's cave. And that's an old Mount Shasta legend. And so we worked that one, and they were going to find the treasure, and then they were going to get in touch with the Darrows and get the secrets of the Darrows. Well,
So, as soon as we get them off, then we go back to the symposium and we do the documentary on Mount Shasta. And that was, we got some really good material on Mount Shasta. And then we explain that Master Philos, at the end of the documentary, is still alive. Master Philos is back in another incarnation, and he's going to take a pilgrimage, take a group of students up to Mount Shasta. So then we have our little drama where the good guys, played by the same people, they get together, and their mission is to convert this very hateful gospel preacher, Bobby John, and the Reverend Bobby John Rich is of the National Crusade, and this guy is so full of hatred and so full of prejudice and bigotry and hatred that the Lithonians, by the way, the good guys, they have decided to take Bobby John up to Mount Shasta and see if they can't have him have a mystical experience, get the hate out of him. That's their mission. Now, they actually kind of engineer this, and we used in the course of this film, we use Enochian. We don't use Shaver's Mantong because we would have had to spend as much time as the Star Trek people did with Klingon in order to get Mantong into some kind of shape to use. So we decided we'd use Enochian for our the language, both of the Darrows, the Angels, and whatever. So consequently, we're using Enochian all through, and you can actually translate the Enochian that we use. All of it is translatable, and so we at one point Philos actually delivers the laws of Atlantis in Enochian, and that's I think a beautiful part of the film. Now. When we start up to Mount Shasta with the Lithonian order, they start up there. They fly up, and whereas the Draconians are driving up in the Black Hummer, the Lithonians are going to fly up. Well, I had some beautiful aerial footage that I got of the mountain. So I talked Mitch, our cameraman, into using that. He didn't want to because it was in a different aspect than the rest of the film. But we got that aerial footage in there. And then now this was really neat because we did this whole film guerrilla style when we were up there. We walked by the airport hoping that we could catch a plane coming in, landing the airport outside of Mount Shasta. And we hoped we could catch a plane landing or taking off, and so we could use that footage. Well, we just couldn't. There was no air traffic at all. And Mitch, the cameraman, he says, okay. He said, tell you what, let's just wander into the hangar and see what we can come up with. So we wandered into the hangar, and here's this big old 2-inch Cessna in there. And Mitch walks over to the pilot, and he says, say, can we borrow your airplane? We're making a movie. And the guy says, sure. I mean, you know, and so we rolled the airplane out, and we all got off the airplane. We got in the airplane, got off, got into Greg's Forerunner, which was a nice silver-colored vehicle in contrast with the Hummer, and with Mount Shasta in the background, and we drove right on into Mount Shasta. And this worked out beautifully. Now, there's one scene in the film right after that where we all stopped by for a little snack at a diner. Now, when the Forerunner with the Lithonians pulls in to the parking lot, the Black Hummer is already out there, and the Draconians are coming out of the same restaurant. So the Draconians in their black outfits are all looking at the Lithonians in their white outfits, and Chris especially, you know, he looks at himself, and himself looks back at him, and then he turns around to Merrick, to Brother Phylos, and he says, "I think I just saw myself." And Merrick says, as a philosopher would, he says, "Well, perhaps you did. We're all reflections of each other." And then, of course, we quick cut to the Hummer where Morgan turns around to Brother Abaddon and says, "I think I just saw myself." And Abaddon says, "Farm is a great deceiver. Be not deceived." And they drive off. And then we see the hourglass is still running. So from then on out, we're having the contrasting adventure here. And down in the caves, they have a ceremony in this big cathedral-like cavern. They have a ceremony in which Merrick reads from the Orphic hymn to Pluto, and that summons a Darrow. So we have a Darrow to deal with. And then, meanwhile, up on the top of the mountain, climbing up the mountain, Merrick reads from the Chaldean oracles. So we're getting, you know, we're working as much really good hermetic material in here as we can. Now, down in the cavern, I won't spoil the film for you, but down in the cavern, they get into all kinds of, the Draconians get into all kinds of trouble and all kinds of stuff, all relating from their selfishness and their evil. And then finally, they come to a bad end. They all do. But up there on the top of the mountain, we have various forms of enlightenment, and we had our sister Lila, and who played by Emily Tramp. She is the kind of the hippie girl who meets the Lemurian priestess, that's Isabella Shahira, and in the temple. And we got Reverend Bobby John, and Reverend Bobby John meets Jesus. And the Master Jesus is, I thought we did this rather cleverly. We had the picture of Paul Clark in his Jesus regalia on top of the mountain. We had that picture in Bobby John's office, and we pulled right off of that picture and then showed Bobby John in an earlier scene. So when Bobby John sees the Master Jesus up there on the mountain, it's the same Master Jesus that he has in his office. And Jesus really straightens him out. And most of what Jesus tells him is actually right from the Synoptic Gospels. He just shows him that all his hatred that he's preaching and he's sharing is just not the way to salvation. So that was good. But then we had Dr. Xavier, who was worried about memories of a previous atomic war. Frater Solomon, who you may remember from Dark Mirror of Magic, Frater Solomon is the he plays the fallen angel, from the Book of Enoch, Semyaza, and he reveals the secret history. He shows up in the UFO and he reveals the secret history of the Anunnaki and the fallen angels coming to Earth and actually being our creators in a sense. So that's and then he predicts 2012, and it's that part of it is really the science fiction end of it. But then Morgan, that's Chris. He is doing his PhD dissertation on sacred mountains, and sure enough, Hermes Trismegistus shows up for him up on top of the mountain. And that's admirably played by Maestro Lon Milo Duquette, plays Hermes Trismegistus, appearing in a vision up on top of the mountain. And he reveals the real secret and the real message of the film. Now, I'm going to read that right from the script, the message that Lon reveals. I'm sure I won't do it as well as Lon did it, but I'll give it a try anyway. You seek to understand why such mountains as this are sacred and holy. As the master Hermes Trismegistus, I taught you that man is a microcosm of the greater universe. As a student of our hermetic master Philos, you learned that you have all the planets of your solar system living within you, but you are closest to Mother Earth. She is the greatest planetary presence within your spiritual body. So, when you climb a sacred mountain in a spiritual state of mind, you are ascending to the heights of your own planetary sphere. You become one with the Earth as she reaches the heavens. In Kabbalistic terms, you are aspiring to Kether of Malkuth. Now, if you wonder why we have myths and legends and mysterious temples that appear on sacred mountains and strange creatures that inhabit the caverns beneath them, you might ask yourself, how far does this microcosmic universe within you extend? How many previous lifetimes have you lived on this planet? How many other lives in other dimensions are you living right now? We see an endless march of worlds going on and on beyond our conception, and yet it is only one dimension that we perceive. There is an invisible infinity of parallel and adjacent universes just outside of our limited perception, in which our counterparts, our shadows and reflections, live and die behind dark curtains that most men never part except in dreams. And this whole vast, interconnected multiverse belongs to each one of us alone. We are the masters of our own personal cosmic infinity, where life imitates art and art imitates life, and everything in creation is a metaphor. You carry heaven and hell in your own pocket, as above, so below, as within, so without. In our philosophy, these other dimensions are considered to be levels in reality. There are many sublevels and superlevels, but three essential realities include them all: your personal reality, your shared reality, and the ultimate reality. To resolve these three realities into one, you must find that still, silent center point within yourself, where the veiled light we call God resides. You will find God nowhere else. Uncover that light and let it shine forth from within you, for that light is the ultimate reality. It transforms your personal reality, and it illuminates your shared reality. To the one who is illuminated, all others are reflections and aspects of himself. This is the one source of his compassion and the true measure of his morality. However, I must leave you with a warning. Wisdom and immortality are the treasures of enlightenment, but no one else can give you that which is yours to find within yourself. No one else can make the decisions for you. Good and evil are for you alone to define. In darkness you may find the light, or beyond the light you may discover darkness. For in truth, you cannot have one without the other. The choice must always be yours. So this was the ultimate vision that Morgan was seeking and that he found on the top of the mountain. Now, of course, down underground, his counterpart, who finally became the Grand Master of the Lothonians under the
under the tutelage of the tarot vampire Zoltan Nodescu, which is admirably played by Greg Jednak, our director. They
all came to a bad, bad end down there. In fact, we had, in homage to Richard Schaefer, we built a fantastic giant ray machine that had all kinds of strange aspects to it. I mean, this ray machine is really, it's kind of worth the whole movie just to see this thing. It's about 7 feet tall, and you have to mount up behind it on a staircase to operate it, because it's designed to appear to be something that a 15 foot tall elder god could sit behind. And you play it like a color organ, and it has a great big tube. And we had a very powerful laser in this thing, which we had to lock down. And poor Emily ended up on the rock. Sister Lilith, she ended up chained to this rock. And then Isabella Shahira is the Darrow princess, and she comes out in a itty bitty steel bikini with spiked breastplates, and she mounts up on top of the machine and plays it like a color organ. Now, while this was going on, of course, the machine is a practical effect. There's no CGI involved in this one at all, and we have our special effects guy, Ted Carey, is down inside the machine. He's down in the power chamber of the machine, and Isabella is with this little bitty steel bikini, is standing right on top of him, and she is operating this thing, and he's playing it between the two of them. You can imagine Doug inside as the gnome running the machine. And of course, this is a sort of a shocking scene where they actually hit poor Emily with a stim ray and cause her to die in ecstasy. And this is the evil climax. And at the same time, of course, this happens up there on the top of the mountain. Bobby John is saved, and he joins them all, and Merrick, Brother Philos, raises his solar staff, catches the light of the sun, and that's the climax of the film. Now, we tried, as you can see, we tried to make this meaningful, and we tried to incorporate a great deal of symbolism and genuine hermetic magic in here, because of course we're using Enochian, we're using hermetic philosophy, and so we're trying to get across a meaningful and a worthwhile content, but we're also trying to do it in a way that holds your interest and keeps you going. Now, we've shown this film several special showings. And we first ran it at the Westchester Masonic Center, and for the Fraternity of Enlightenment had a big conclave. We ran it there, and that was the premiere of it. And then we got it released and got it on Amazon. It's and you can get it right now. You can get it on Amazon. You order it, and we got it on IMDb. I mean, so it's a real movie. We've got it. We're on IMDb, and this is 2 hours of very, very profound and also fun, because one of the things we decided to do was to do this thing like a 1950s, kind of like a 1950s B-grade science fiction thriller, to do it in that style. And we felt if we did it in that style, it would enable us to get across this rather dated material in a better way, because this material is from an earlier period, and so it gives it that flavor. In many ways, I think that was a good decision, because
Well, let's face it, we're not as professional as we would have liked to have been, and our budget, of course, was limited. So we did the best we could, and we just ran this thing recently. Charles Irwin is to be thanked for that. He arranged to have us show it at Hop Louie's in Chinatown. Hop Louie's is the old Madame Wong's. That's the pagoda down in Chinatown in L.A., and we showed it to about 30 L.A. art students down there, and they really liked it. I mean, they really enjoyed the film. And afterward, we had a lot of really good questions. I remember there was one fellow that he said, "Well, he said, you guys really believe all this, and it seems like maybe you're not taking yourself seriously." And I said, "Well, come on now. Look, if we had a $35 million budget, we would have taken ourselves more seriously. But we thought because of the budget that we did have, we ought to kind of be a little campy once in a while, just to sort of let you know that we were that we were having fun." And of course, we were. We were having a lot of fun. And then there was another fellow that said, "Well, I understand. You got high-ranking Masons and former intelligence officers, and you got these people in this playing these roles in this thing." And he says, "Is that true?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I guess you might say that's true.
If we told you who the spy master was, we'd probably have to kill you." And so we had, but they generally they really really liked it. Now, I would like to mention also, before I pass it over here, that we just got got our Hermetic Hour on iTunes. And iTunes is where you go to access all of this sort of thing. And so you find us on iTunes now, and now so I think we're pretty well established with this show. And we can thank Soror's Andrea for that. She's done a wonderful job producing this show, and I just really I can't thank her enough for all of this. Now, something I would like you guys to do out there on this, I'd like you to get the film. Those of you who don't have it yet, we have a nice little booklet inside the DVD. We have a nice 8-page booklet with all of the pertinent philosophy, like the one I just read you that Lon Duquette delivered. We have this nice 8-page booklet inside the video. So go on Amazon and order the video. And also, if you have in your area a group, or a special group of people that would enjoy this film, that would really enjoy it, and then let's start doing like we did, like Charles Irwin did down at Hop Louie's. Now, Mark Nelson over in Prescott, he had it run. They ran it over there at a cafe, and we got the brewery up in Mount Shasta. They're running it. So this is a neat thing. You can have parties with this film, and those of you who are interested in this kind of material, and have discussion groups, and we're all for that. We want to get this. We would like this to become an underground classic, and so that's what we suggest that maybe you might want to do with it is to get the film and show it in strange, funky, out of the way places and get people to. People on the know together to watch this and start talking about it. If you liked Inception, and a lot of people do, if you liked Inception, I think you're going to like Beyond Lemuria. And of course, if you like Joe Jurowski's Holy Mountain, you're really going to like Beyond Lemuria. Anyway, I think we're running. How much time do we have left? Yeah, 5 minutes left. Okay, I tell you what I'm going to do in this 5 minutes remaining. I'm going to I'm going to read for you. Let's see here. I'm going to read for you the prophecy of the fallen angel, Semyaza. And this was Mike. Mike up there on the top of the mountain with his he's kind of green, and he has three eyes, and he has horns, and he has mechanical hands. And this is where Mitch got a chance to use some CGI, and he got all three eyes to blink at the same time. This is pretty good. And so the Semyaza appears above the mountain in the vision of Dr. Xavier and says,
"I am Semyaza, first among those you call the fallen angels. We were the elder gods of your myths, the Elohim of your scripture. We were the Titans and the Atlans, the founders of Lemuria and Atlantis, the giants in the earth. We advanced your intelligence. We evolved you to serve our needs. We taught you the rudiments of science, but not the refinements of philosophy. We gave you knowledge, but not wisdom. When the world tottered on its axis with the coming of the Dark Star, many of us fled outward to distant worlds, while others descended under the earth, leaving you, our children, upon the surface to struggle upward from savagery to civilization, only to fall back into barbarism with each cyclic return of the cosmic nemesis. With the scientific advancements of your third age, you might have saved your culture, but you seared the planet with atomic fire and sunk into brutish ignorance even before the Dark Star returned to bring on the Great Flood. Now, once again, the doom comes soon upon you. You have 6 of your years left to save your civilization. This living rock book and its prophecy is our last gift to you. Read it carefully and heed it well.
The Dark Star shall return time and time again and shall bring the curse of storms, fire, earthquakes, and darkness unto the earth.
When the monarch of the heavens is paled from view, men must descend underground or die."
Little boy. Anyway, so you can see,
we have touched
all the bases in here. We got 2012 covered, and we call this an adventure in wonder and terror. And of course, I think we've succeeded in that respect, at least. And we had a lot of fun making this movie, and we think that all the fun we had making this movie, you can have just about as much fun watching it. Especially if this is the sort of thing that really interests you. And one of the things I think that those of you, even though you don't know about Shaver and you don't know about Shasta, if you're interested in American occultism, you should. Because these are now parts of American folklore. This is part of the American occult heritage. And this is the only film that has ever shown these elements. So, let's get behind Beyond Lemuria. You can visit our website, www.beyondlemuria.com, and let's get behind Beyond Lemuria and see if we can't get some private showings going. Okay, next week we're going to deal with another aspect, which I will for hermetic science, which I'll get out to you, and we'll see you next week. And meanwhile, good magic.